Did you know Instacart delivers more than groceries? You can get tech, beauty, office supplies, sporting goods, and more, all delivered right to your door in as fast as an hour. So whether you're cooking dinner or your phone charger is cooked, you can save yourself multiple trips by shopping over 1,000 stores in the Instacart app. Visit instacart.com or download the app to get free delivery on your first order. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum order $10. Additional terms apply.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to talk about the situation that has unfolded with the Alabama basketball team. Let me say this right from the start. I was listening to Greg McElroy today on Jocks FM, and he did a really powerful and emotional 16-minute or so monologue. And the way that he started it was absolutely correct. Because I think a lot of times we're in this sports world, we get caught up in what's going to happen with the basketball team. What's going to happen with a player status? You know, what about what a coach said? The most important thing is remembering the life of Jamiah Harris, who has a young child who is now going to grow up without a mother. And we need to remember her first. And send all the thoughts and prayers and all the well wishes moving forward into the future with her family. So she was tragically murdered. There's no other way to put it. But when you go through the details of everything involved here, and Alabama.com, I thought, did a really good job laying this all out. So Darius Miles, who you remember, player in Alabama basketball team, has since been dismissed, obviously. And Michael Davis, who is a friend of Darius Miles, they are facing capital murder charges in the murder of Jamiah Harris. Now, Brandon Miller, and we found this out yesterday, who we all know is a star player, is maybe, you know, arguably the player of the year in college basketball, and in some mock drafts is projected to be like the third overall pick in the NBA draft. Yesterday, you find out that allegedly, he drove Darius Miles to the place that they were going out. But as he was doing that, he saw the line of whatever club they were trying to go into. He thought it was too long, so he went and got dinner and dropped off his teammate Darius Miles. Now, Cedric Johnson, who is the boyfriend of Jamiah Harris, and her first cousin, Asia Humphrey, stopped at a nearby grill to get something to eat with Jamiah Harris. It was then that they encountered Michael Davis, who, according to Alabama.com, was dancing in front of Harris's Jeep. Johnson told Davis that his girlfriend was not interested and to move along. It got a little elevated from there, the detective testified. Now, the Tuscaloosa police investigator, Brandon Culpepper, said that Davis said to the boyfriend, "You don't know who I am and what I do." And then I guess from there what I read in the reporting that you had Darius Miles and Michael Davis then walk away. And right there, that should be the end of the story, right? You walk away, you go home, and we're not sitting here in this situation today. And then at some point, Brandon Miller got a text from Darius Miles to bring his gun. We'll give you the other side of that story in just a second. So Brandon Miller returns, and his car and Jaden Bradley, who's another player on the Alabama basketball team, I guess, according to reports, are blocking the road where Jamiah Harris's car was. Then moments later, Brandon Culpepper, who's once again the Tuscaloosa police investigator, testified that Davis approached the victim's car and said, "I told you I was going to get you," and then began firing through the driver's side window of the Jeep. And as we know, by now, unfortunately, Jamiah Harris got killed. So it goes on to say, because law enforcement was asked, like, "All right, we know that Darius Miles and Michael Davis are facing capital murder charges. Why didn't Brandon Miller get charged with anything?" And law enforcement said, "That's not a question I can answer. There's nothing we could charge him with according to the law." And that's what was said. So yesterday, Nate Oates gets asked about this. The question was something along the lines of, if NBA scouts ask you about Brandon Miller, what would you say? And Nate Oates, who's like the third or fourth highest paid official in the state, gave like a horrible answer. Like just an absolutely ridiculous answer that just shows you in these types of situations, people's priorities are just all out of whack, where the last thought should be about thinking about the player and making sure that the player and just avoiding things that may or may not have happened so the player could play tonight. But Nate Oates basically gave the line of, it's just college kids, right? Pretty much like boys will be boys. Like, what? In this case? That made no sense. So Nate Oates then clarified his statement. And I don't know when Nate Oates found out about everything. But what Nate Oates said was he knew that other players were involved and at the scene. But law enforcement has assured them that they did nothing wrong. So we got more information today. You'll hear from Greg Byrne, who's the athletic director at Alabama, in just a second. But Brandon Miller's attorney released this statement today, and we'll read you a few paragraphs of it. On January 14th, Brandon played in a basketball game in the afternoon and later was asked by Darius Miles for a ride to the strip area to go to a nightclub. Mr. Miles brought his legal handgun and left it in the back seat of Brandon's vehicle. Brandon never saw the handgun nor handled it. Further, it is our understanding that the weapon was concealed under some clothing in the back seat of his car. Brandon did not go inside the nightclub. Instead, he left and went to a restaurant to eat. At approximately midnight, Mr. Miles began asking Brandon to come pick him up so they could leave and go to another location and join friends. Brandon advised that he would be along later, and approximately 1 hour later, Brandon began to leave the restaurant to pick up Mr. Miles, but first had to give another companion a ride home. Before Brandon arrived to pick up Mr. Miles and the individual with Ms. Harris apparently exchanged words. Without Brandon knowing any of this context, and as Brandon was already on the way to pick up Mr. Miles then texted Brandon and asked him to bring his firearm. Brandon subsequently arrived at the scene to pick up Mr. Miles. Brandon never got out of the vehicle or interacted with anyone in Ms. Harris's party. He was never involved in a verbal altercation with Cedric Johnson or Mr. Davis. Brandon never touched a gun, was not involved in its exchange to Mr. Davis in any way, and never knew the illegal activity involving the gun would occur. Brandon did not block, this according to his attorney, Brandon did not block the Jeep driven by Mr. Johnson. In fact, Brandon had already parked on Gray Street when the Jeep pulled up behind him. The street was never blocked by Brandon's vehicle. Gunfire erupted shortly after the Jeep arrived, and Brandon's vehicle was struck by bullets fired from one of the guns. Brandon quickly left the area when gunfire erupted. As soon as he was notified that someone had been injured and the police wished to speak with him, he has fully cooperated with law enforcement and in law enforcement's investigation. So that is a few paragraphs about what Brandon Miller's attorney is trying to clarify from some of the reporting yesterday. I don't know what is true and what is false here. I don't. But in this case, you're going to get questions. And Brandon Miller, for all we know right now, is not getting charged from the statements that we read. And also, we don't know what the intent was and if he knew that the gun was going to be used for what it was or not. Like, I'm not a legal expert here. But there is a big conversation, you know, as you're waiting to hear what's going to happen, if Brandon Miller should play tonight. And you could form your own argument on that and formulate your own argument on that. We'll get to some of the audio in just a second. But if yesterday's press conference by Nate Oates is any indication of what was going to happen, as long as Brandon Miller doesn't get charged with something, he is going to play for Alabama basketball. And Nate Oates, I know people are irate about what he said yesterday. I totally hear you. It was disgusting what he said yesterday. But he's not going to get suspended for those comments in the press conference. Here is the athletic director at Alabama, Greg Byrne, on Brandon Miller's status for tonight versus South Carolina. This was on College Game Day, their podcast.
He is in South Carolina with our team. He went through walkthrough today, and we expect him to play this evening.
And Greg Byrne on why Brandon Miller is still eligible to play.
Given the gravity of the situation and out of respect for the judicial process, I'd urge everyone to defer to the facts provided by law enforcement rather than relying necessarily on social media or other snippets of information that lack context to form conclusions. We need to let law enforcement, the attorneys, the district attorney, and the judge to do their jobs. We very much respect the jobs they have to do. We will too will continue to rely on official information provided by law enforcement.
And then Greg Byrne reprimands Nate Oates for his press conference on Tuesday.
Yesterday, we began to hear some new things from the hearing, and Coach Oates had just come out of practice and did not have the information from the hearing when he was talking with the media directly after practice. He did not handle that in a way that he should have. We've addressed that with him.
So I guess what they're claiming, Ryan, just from that last answer, and correct me if you're understanding this a different way, that they didn't know all the details that were testified and talked about yesterday with Brandon Miller, and they were just told, hey, you had other players that were involved, but from what they claim, that law enforcement said that they did nothing wrong, or there's no reason to believe that they were going to be charged as well. Is that the way that you kind of heard it?
With Greg Byrne's last response about Nate Oates?
No, just patching everything together with that. Yeah, when he was talking about coming out of practice.
Yeah. Yeah, just,
right?
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't ask more questions, but apparently Nate Oates was told yes, or was under the belief that people were involved, but they're not getting charged, and it sounds like he just buried his head in the sand.
Also, totally a small point in this. With something that is so serious here, why would you, if that is true, and take it for what it's worth, but if Nate Oates is speaking to the media, and you know this stuff is out there, like I don't think this broke in the middle of the press conference, how do you let him speak until he is properly prepared to understand everything that was made aware to us yesterday? Like that to me, I don't understand that for the life of me, Hickey.
Yeah, maybe it's on Alabama for not, like I said, maybe he truly just didn't know and just didn't realize.
Which I don't know is true or not.
I don't know. Yeah. Like I said, we don't know. We just don't know what he said yesterday. He apologized for it afterwards, but yeah, just kind of was, just gave a very callous response of wrong place, wrong time, and nothing, you know, he could do, and just was basically skirting blame for anything that happened.
And then also the athletic statement from Alabama. This was put out on Twitter. UA Athletics continue to cooperate fully with law enforcement in the ongoing investigation of this tragic situation. Based on all the information we have received, Brandon Miller is not considered a suspect in this case, only a cooperative witness. Today's statement from Brandon's lawyer adds additional context that the university has considered as part of it, part of its review of the facts. Based on all of the facts we've gathered, Brandon remains an active member of our team. If they were to suspend him, let's just say, and I think if you're being realistic here, if he did not get charged from now until the start of the NCAA tournament or even the SEC tournament, it's like, if you're going to suspend him, how do you then determine when you bring him back? Because it would be a bad look if you suspend him and then you don't find out any other further information. And then it's like, oh, the SEC tournament started, so now we're gonna play. That's like the difficult part here. Because you read what happened yesterday, then you read the statements today. You don't know what to believe. All you know is that Jamiah Harris is dead, and it's horrible. And if he's not getting charged with anything, it's like, did you give the gun? Did you know that the gun was in that car and what it was going to be used for? You didn't. And I don't know how you prove that with the information that we have right now. So nothing's going to happen to Nate Oates unless something else comes out. But Brandon Miller, like, that's the part of it that this is not going to be something that anyone's going to be able to hide from, because Alabama is a tremendous team this year. They're number two in the country. And you know that right now is the time where a lot of people pop up and start to be college basketball fans. So this could be a major story. Obviously, it's a major story on its own. But it's going to get more and more talked about during the SEC tournament and during the NCAA tournament, because it's not like Brandon Miller doesn't make this right or wrong. It's not like Brandon Miller is never heard about during the game. He's their star player. So this is just, like, I don't even know how to react to it other than you just feel horrible for Jamiah Harris's family and what they have to go through. And you know what Darius Miles and Michael Davis are facing capital murder charges. But everything else after that, it's like, yeah, part of me wants to say, oh, if Brandon Miller knew, you know, lock him up. But then you hear the attorney statement. I know what the attorney's supposed to do. It's right to defend Brandon Miller. And you're like, well, that was the case. They didn't know that the gun was in the car. And then he shows up and he didn't hand him over the gun. And he was already on his way. It's like, I really don't know what to believe here, Hickey.
That's why, for me, I think you got to suspend him. Because at this point, we have two conflicting stories. You have the police saying he got the gun, brought him the gun, used his car to block an exit for, unfortunately, for the victims that were obviously shot so they could not escape. That's what the police are telling you yesterday under oath. Today, you have the attorney for Brandon Miller saying the opposite. Basically, he didn't know the gun was in the car.
No.
He had no idea what was going on. And his car did not block the entrance. It did not, you know, be a blockade to prevent fleeing. So we have two opposite sides of a story. Clearly, one side is either exaggerating the truth or not giving the whole truth. But this is, I mean, potentially a guy who's helped, in a way, helped his teammate murder someone. Like, I don't say you can let him play just under the suspicion of that happening. Even if there's actual no formal charges brought, he still technically, possibly, maybe helped someone murder someone else.
Now, people, and I totally understand everything you're saying, people will say innocent until proven guilty. And we've seen a lot of times where people get suspended or lose their job before we find out what happens legally. But I thought it was made pretty clear right now that they don't intend to charge him with anything. Like, yesterday, it was, we don't even know what we could charge him with, which is like, just shows you how messed up the legal system is if they don't even know what they could charge him with, even if they wanted to charge him with something.
Yeah, obviously, I'm no lawyer. I have no idea how that works.
Yeah, I don't pretend to be
why,
one.
Like, right. But it's just, I mean, at some point, common sense has to prevail here and just say, technically, sure, he could not be charged. We've seen other athletes in many other situations across sports not get charged with a crime and still be punished by their respective team or league. So, in this situation, again, it's with how serious it is. I just don't see how you can allow him to play, but they're going to play.
And that's what I was going to say. Doesn't matter what you and I think. We could sit here and yell about it until we're blue in the face. The bottom line is, if he does not get charged, which right now I don't have a reason to believe that he is going to, just with the way that we've read about this in the last 24, 48 hours, if he doesn't get charged, Alabama's going to say he did nothing wrong. And, you know, if he doesn't, he's been a cooperative witness, right? That was the wording that they use. So they're gonna play him. And it just once again shows you in sports, if you leave it up to the teams, if you leave it up to the programs, and there's nothing legally pending with Brandon Miller where he's getting charged, then they're going to find that avenue to allow Brandon Miller to play. And we'll see how it's going to be covered the rest of the way throughout the end of the regular season, the SEC tournament, and then however long their NCAA tournament run is for Alabama with the Crimson Tide this year. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. QB Carousel next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Step right up here. Don't be shy.
The Super Bowl is over, but the NFL quarterback carousel is just beginning.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
What does the future hold for all 32 NFL teams at the QB position?
Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity to spin this wheel right here.
Let's spin the wheel and find out which teams we hit today. The Houston Texans.
All righty, let's go down to Houston, and we're going to welcome in a man right now that usually the last two and a half years when we talk to him, it's always a negative story with the Texans, but now the Texans have their new head football coach, a familiar friend, and a guy that was an unbelievable player for them in D'Amico Ryans. And there's some optimism because they have the second overall pick in the draft. And now joining us is Seth Payne. Seth, I guess it's good to talk about something positive with you for once.
It is. I think the last time I talked to you, I was visiting family in upstate New York, and I was driving through a blizzard. And I remember very distinctly thinking, I wish I would just go off the road instead of having to keep talking about the Texans. So this has been a much more enjoyable experience ever since D'Amico walked in the doors.
So what was your first reaction about D'Amico Ryans getting the job? Because I know that is basically NFL home for him and what he did in his career, but I was surprised that the guy that was probably the hottest name and the guy that everyone interviewed with ended up with the Texans.
Yeah, I was in a position where I had pretty good reason to believe that D'Amico was interested in the job, but it wasn't anything that I wanted to go public about, and I had to kind of just tell people, listen, these reports that D'Amico doesn't want the job are likely erroneous, and so it was frustrating for a little while there, especially when, you know, there was radio darkness during the playoffs. And D'Amico basically had told the Texans on his interview before they had to go into a moratorium period that he wanted to come to the Texans, that this is where he wanted to be for a multitude of reasons. But that's rare in the NFL. You know, that's rare for an NFL head coach to even have a specific location he wants to be at. They're largely mercenaries going wherever the best opportunity is. But his wife is from Houston. He played here, obviously. And I think what mattered a lot too was that he knows the McNair family, as opposed to a lot of other people that, you know, think they know what the Texans ownership is about. D'Amico actually knows the McNair family, and I think that helped a lot. So it's a 180 degree difference from how things felt a month or 6 weeks ago.
You were there for his rookie year. What do you remember about your time together with D'Amico Ryan?
I'll tell you, honestly, they put him in as a starter pretty early in camp, and I was in my 10th year in the league at that point. And I was just kind of grumpy about rookies getting starting jobs.
You're
way
like an
too
old
early
dog
anyway.
That doesn't want to play with the puppy.
yeah. So I remember the first day we were in camp and he was in the huddle as a starter, he was having a hard time getting the call out. He was kind of stuttering a little bit. And I yelled at him, and you know, with a few choice swear words and everything. And I remember he kind of looked at me with this like this wise old man look about him. Kind of like a beastmaster, he calmed me. And it was really apparent from very early on that he just had a special quality about him that was just born to lead. And you know, you hear that universally from people that have played alongside of him, the guys that were coached by him in San Francisco. I think sometimes people make the mistake of saying that San Francisco defense is just loaded with talent, and they are, but they're not high draft picks. You know, Fred Warner was a mid-round draft pick. You know, Bosa obviously was a stud, and they got some first-rounders there. But the safety there, Hufanga, was not a high draft pick. They got coached really well by both Robert Saleh and then, you know, now D'Amico Ryan for the last couple of years.
So there's a lot of moving factors here. You got to go get the talent now in that building. But this is the first time in a long time where the Texans make a hire and it's like, okay, you could actually expect that guy to be there for the rebuild and not just someone they're hiring just to hire and then they'll fire after a year. You're pretty confident that there's not going to be that much of a struggle going from a defensive coordinator to a head coach, because we've seen guys before be these highly touted coordinators and then be disasters as head coaches.
Yeah, you know, and I totally get and generally now go for the idea that you should be hiring an offensive coach if it's a tiebreaker. I think first and foremost, you should be looking for the guys who have the best leadership ability. And, you know, frankly, a lot of guys who are really good coordinators, and we know this by now, it's well established, they get into that head coaching role and they lack those leadership qualities. They lack the ability to delegate, to budget their time, and more than anything, you know, split their energy.
Matt Patricia.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So I think he has all those things. And then the other thing is that, you know, they hire Bobby Slowick, who comes over from San Francisco. And D'Amico spent most of his career as a player and as a coach in a Gary Kubiak or Kyle Shanahan type of system. So I think he is a guy who was very inquisitive from very early on. You know, his rookie year, he was quizzing Matt Schaub all the time. Well, Schaub wasn't there his rookie year, but from early on, you know, he was quizzing Matt Schaub about exactly why the defense operates the way it does. You know, what are they looking at when they make their checks and their calls? And he kept up that curiosity as a defensive player and as a coach. So I think hopefully he has a really good idea of, A, what he's looking for and how to help those guys, to help those offensive coaches. But then B, you know, there are enough teams running some version of the Kubiak Shanahan system. I call it the Kubiak Shanahan system. So we want a Kubiak Shanahan coach because they're easy to replace. It's like a Ford F-150. Like, you can find spare parts for a Ford F-150 because there's so many of them out there. And likewise, with that offense, if you lose an offensive coordinator because he gets a head coaching job, you've got a multitude of other coaches out there who can come in and not have to upend your young quarterback with a whole bunch of new lingo and schemes and philosophies.
Seth Payne here with us. We'll talk about the potential quarterback pick at 2 in just a second, but where's your belief level in Nick Casera? Because it feels like they have the right coach, whatever that means at this stage, but still a lot of questions about Casera.
I think so far, and this is, you know, I know Nick a little bit, and I know D'Amico, you know, somewhat, just from conversations over the years. I was in my last year in the league when he was a rookie, so we didn't spend a lot of time together. But I had a feeling that they would get on very well because they're both guys who I think are really adept at, you know, setting themselves aside, you know, not having big egos about things. So I don't think there is going to be a lot of, you know, stubbornness like it perhaps was at times between various head coaches in the past here with the Texans. You know, somewhere between Kubiak, because Kubiak had no ego either. But there was some butting of heads at times with other guys. So I think that
Bill O'Brien is what Seth is saying.
What's that?
I said Bill O'Brien is what you're alluding
to. Yeah. I like O'Brien. I think, like, honestly,
he's a bad GM.
Yeah, exactly. That was the biggest mistake the team ever made, and it was just a snowball of effects after that. So those guys so far are getting on really well. I think they see the game and break down the game the same way. So, you know, it's early on. We can be very positive about all this, but I do feel a genuine, like, there's a vibe there between those two that I don't think maybe that Casera might have expected. He was kind of – he says he was blown away by D'Amico in the interview, and Nick's not the kind of guy that's going to be able to sell you a line. Like, he's not a natural-born salesman, you know. And when he was up in the press conference, he actually looked like he was beaming about the hire of D'Amico. Like, he was just so happy with the interview and the discussions they'd had that it was a really good feeling.
Wrapping up with Seth Payne. So it feels like you guys should have the number one overall pick, but we know you messed that up at the end of the year. If you guys did have the number one overall pick, would it be Bryce Young, in your opinion?
It's, you know, they've done a really good job of not leaking anything at all. I think it would be Bryce Young, just because, again, between both those guys, between D'Amico and Nick, I think there's both those guys want football players first and foremost, and I think they're willing to set aside some of the measurables. I love Bryce Young. I am as nervous as hell about his frame size. I wouldn't mind if he was just short, but he's we try to compare him to Doug Flutie, and I think Flutie was a little bit thicker than him, you know. So that's what makes me nervous. I'm sure it probably makes some people nervous there, but I think he's the best football player amongst all those top quarterback prospects.
Do you think they'll have to move up to one to get him? Because it seems like, according to what Jim Irsay said at that introductory press conference, that they love that Alabama quarterback. So do you fear maybe the Colts moving into that one spot?
This is where I am with Jim Irsay. I think he's smarter than people, or maybe he's a little less crazy than people want to believe that he is. But I don't think he's genius enough to throw that out there when they actually do want Bryce Young. It feels like that was a lot of smoke that he threw out there with the vague notion that, hey, we'll throw some smoke out there. But I don't think he would have done it if he actually liked Bryce Young. So the fact that I had to think about it that much means that Jim Irsay has already – I've been bested by Jim Irsay.
So basically what you're saying is he wants the Texans to take Bryce Young because they want C.J. Stroud probably.
Yeah, or maybe they don't have strong feelings about either guy, but they'd love for the Texans to blow a few draft picks on trying to trade up one spot.
Do you think there's any chance – I know they're sitting there at 2 and then 12. Do you think there's any chance at 2 they don't take a quarterback?
The Colts?
The Texans.
I do think there's that chance. You know, and part of that is both D'Amico and Nick have experience now. You know, Casera through New England and D'Amico through San Francisco, they understand that there's multiple different ways you can get a quarterback and that the draft is just one of them. So especially, you know, these last few years, some Super Bowl winning teams have had some success trading for veteran quarterbacks. So Casera has mentioned multiple times that, hey, the draft is just one tool for acquiring players. So, yeah, if they are just too scared off by Bryce Young's size, or maybe they just don't like him for whatever reason, I don't think that they would have a problem standing pat. And because of the goodwill that came with the fan base, because the fans are just over the, you know, over the moon about D'Amico, I think people are willing to be patient for a year and just see where it takes them if they decide not to draft the quarterback this year.
I think that would mean they would have to make a move rather quickly on Carr, or maybe you could wait a little bit with Jimmy G. Is that in play, in your opinion?
I think, honestly, I could see them taking Anthony Richardson as a project, a guy that might not need to play immediately. And people probably think this sounds crazy. If they don't take a quarterback, I wouldn't be surprised if Davis Mills ends up at least getting a chance to start. Wow. Because it's going to be stock the roster up as much as possible, and then move forward from there. I don't know if they want to be aggressive enough and blow those draft picks or cap space on Garoppolo or Carr just yet.
Interesting. Appreciate the time. Thank you, Seth.
My pleasure.
There you go. Seth Payne joining us on the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we got to laugh at these Hall of Fame comments regarding Derek Carr.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Hickey, did you see the reaction to Dom Capers today at his press conference with the Carolina Panthers at all?
Yes and no. I saw some tweets about his great hair.
What do you mean, yes and no?
Hair. I did not actually see a picture, though, of said hair. And I thank you for reminding me. I actually meant to look it up before, and I forgot.
This was like maybe the second biggest topic today on social media. I need you to do this right now. Google, or just go on Twitter and search Dom Capers and go to photos. And you tell me, does he just have an endorsement with Just for Men? Or is this a toupee or like a wig on his cabeza?
I mean, I'm not even sure if that's a toupee. That looks like almost like painted / stapled on. That is a terrible look. That is like it's so bad.
Welcome to February 22nd here, Hickey.
If you are a member of that defense, honestly, I don't know how you could take it seriously. Like, honestly, if he's telling you the technique for the 3-4 and how to rush a lineman,
yeah,
or rush an offensive tackle, I don't know how you can look him in the straight face as he's talking to you with that hair pinned on his head. The sideburns clearly a dead giveaway.
And he's 72.
Then
turn 73 in August.
Get rid of it. You don't need, at that age,
I would agree.
You shouldn't care.
Now, I don't know if that is dye just because you don't want to be gray, or if you're bald and then you're putting that, how do you want to say this, that rug on your cabeza? Like, I don't know. But either way, when you're 72 years old, about to turn 73, I think you just either have to embrace being bald or embrace being gray. Like, you're not fooling anyone with that. Like, almost, and he's proud of it, too. Because if he just wanted to do that, and then in his private life, that's how he wanted to look, that's fine. But he's in the public eye. Like, no baseball cap? Could you not find one that would fit? Like, seriously? That's a rough look.
You know me. I love Frank Reich. But Frank, in the interview process, what in the world? Like, again, how do you sit there and listen to what this guy is saying and take him seriously when that, like, it's not only the worst toupee, it's also the worst dye job. It's a best of both worlds. It is awful. Oh.
You know what it reminds me of? Carlos Boozer. Remember Carlos Boozer?
At least I was painted on. There was no hair there.
Oh, this may be the same thing. I don't know what's underneath that. I really don't.
It's like a helmet. Where do you think he puts it at night? I have asked to have his own stand for it, you guess.
Well, I'm still debating. Is it actually something that he has to put on each and every morning? Is it just a terrible dye job?
No, it's a helmet. Yeah, look at the hairline.
I would agree with you.
It is a perfect hairline. Made artificially.
So, you know me. I'm friendly with Mac and Bone. I'm one of our great affiliates, WFNZ. They're having Dom Capers on tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
Now, I did a weekly with them in football season, each and every Friday. I feel like I've developed a good enough relationship with those guys where I could ask for a small favor. Do I text Bone and do I say, hey, I'll give you $100 if during one of the resets tomorrow you go, Dom Capers is here with us on behalf of Just for Men. Or maybe you got to go with like a razor company. Maybe you go with a razor company and like, coach, what are you going to do with that hair of yours? They got to ask him about his hair, right?
Has to be the first question right out of the gate. Coach, what is going on?
I'm going to text him. Will you ask Dom tomorrow about that rug on his head?
I mean, this is...
Now, this is guys that do morning drive radio, so it is 7:48 p.m. Eastern. Now, Bone is not an old man, so I would think that he would be up. Still, you never know, though. But that is... You're, like, stunned here. I can't believe you went throughout this entire day as a radio producer, and this is now, like, the first time you're actually examining it.
And this is, like...
Bone did a good job. Already got back to me. He said, I'll put that on Mac.
Wow.
All right. $100 if you reset it with either Just for Men or a rug company. That's what I just texted him. We'll see if they bring it up tomorrow. So now it's on Mac. It is on Mac. And let me just tell Bone, I'm talking about this as we speak. So we'll see what happens there. You're like really stunned.
Like I've seen probably at least 30 pictures. I'm still scrolling.
Well, you also have a good head of hair too.
It gets worse every... But this is what I would confidently say to myself. If I had bad hair, no hair, I would never resort to the level of Dom Capers, at age 72, trying to fool people thinking that this is all natural when it like who are you fooling? You are the fool.
That's the second thing that I've heard from you today that I don't believe. Because
I'm showing you the picture. I will never make myself the fool looking like this.
You are the same person, though, who said there was a 0% chance that Jeff Saturday would get the head football coaching job with the Colts. And then when I said to you, if you really feel like it's 0%, you would, if he gets the job, would you be willing to shave off your hair? And you said no, because you would refuse to ever go bald. So I kind of think in that case, it shows how protective you are with your hair when you know it's going to grow back at your age of 28 years old. And your hair, you don't even look like you have a receding hairline whatsoever. Like you have good hair. You were so protective that way. I think it may be like, does your family have a history of being bald? Just wondering.
My dad's side, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, it comes from your mom's side, so I'm good.
You never know about it. That's what they say. You don't ever actually know about that.
Had a tremendous head of hair.
All right, but let's say if you get more of the gene from your father, and like in 15 years, you start to lose a lot of your hair, you would just embrace it and go all bald?
Oh, yeah. I would let it go.
Okay.
The worst thing you can do is try to save something that's going.
Gotcha.
You're not fooling anyone.
I'm just asking.
Not fooling anyone.
The other thing I heard from you today, I don't really believe this. You said on Twitter that you've never had a sip of Pepsi or Coca-Cola in your life?
That is correct.
How did that come up, by the way?
100% correct. Because according to the New York Post, it said people who drink soda have bigger testicles and have more testosterone. Said, oh, checks out. Someone who's never had soda before, checks out.
So what you're saying is your footballs are deflated a little bit, is what you're
saying. That was a joke I was making, yes.
Gotcha. So, you and Tom Brady get along a little bit.
Well, I guess so.
That's to take the air pressure out a little bit.
Helps, you know, greats usually migrate to greats. So, I would agree with that. Yes, me and Tom Brady.
So, you really never had a sip of Coke or Pepsi? Like, I'm not a big soda drinker. I do not drink Coke or Pepsi. Growing up, I used to all the time. The only time I'll drink it now is maybe a splash of it with some alcohol if I'm out. You've never in your life, like when you're 5 or 6... You know, different if it's recently. Never had one drop of Coke or Pepsi on that tongue of yours.
Parents didn't allow it. Mom was a nurse growing up. But she was a nurse early in her career. She knew it was bad, so she's never allowed us, you know. I was a milk fiend. Like 3 times a day for dinner.
That's pretty breastfeeding?
Gross looking back. No, regular 2%
milk. Oh, you know, I don't know if you're like a baby, like 4 or 5, still breastfeeding.
Be like milk with spaghetti, milk with tacos.
Really?
It was kind of gross when I was younger, yeah, but huge milk guy.
You know what? I do have a weird milk craving. Whenever, and it's only when I'm home, and I get a slice of buffalo chicken pizza, Like 30 minutes after I have that pizza and I'm home, I don't drink milk in my apartment. But when I go to visit my folks, for whatever the reason is, I like just go through the milk that they have in the fridge. And whenever I have a slice of buffalo chicken pizza, like 30 minutes later, I just crave some chocolate and some milk. I don't know why that is.
Well, chocolate makes sense to go with milk. I mean, is your mouth on fire from like the buffalo chicken? It's a little hot. You know, you got to cool it down.
I don't know why.
You never know.
But you've never been. That's inconceivable to me. Like my mom tried to get me off soda for years, and then I listened. Like when I was like 14 or 15, and just didn't like the taste of it anymore. Like my mom would read articles about how they used to use like Pepsi or diet soda to clean out the toilets, and she would like go up to the toilets and show you how it would clean the toilets, things like that. But like, did you ever go to McDonald's as a kid?
Yeah.
And you never had like a Pepsi?
No. Like it grosses me out.
Is your
like
sister
Pepsi
the same
Coke?
Way? She's never had soda?
No, she has.
Ah.
But not a lot. Child. Like she doesn't drink it a lot either.
Gotcha.
But yeah. No never, Pepsi or Coke.
What do you mix alcohol with? You
tonic
straight?
Water. Or straight.
Okay.
Well, G&T, soda, you know, you say vodka soda, but usually it's
is that
tonic
like all
water.
Sodas? Like 7-Up?
I've had 7-Up before.
Okay. But it's just Coke or Pepsi.
Coke or
had.
Pepsi. Ugh.
Like if you had ginger ale.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's not really soda.
I'm just going through all the different kind of potential sodas with you. It's intriguing to me. Talking Derek Carr next.